One thing that always interested me, because I never really did like the whole, I never really did like the whole auditioning space and like auditioning for different shows. And so what would you think? Because you said that you had a chance to like learn, really learn with this last audition. What are some things that you would say that you've learned over time after doing so many of these and, you know, all the travels that you do? Like, what's some things that you've really learned as a dancer doing those like big auditions and stuff?
Oh man, this is a great question. I feel like as you gain the experience points, essentially, as you kind of rack in experience while you're going to auditions or putting yourself in these professional and pressured situations, I think I'm starting to grasp the fact that we put the 10,000 hours in. We've worked to claim the moment. We've worked to earn this spot in this audition. So ultimately finding the clarity as to why I'm even there in the first place. Because a lot of these auditions, especially here in Las Vegas, they're private auditions. So these companies are reaching out directly to the artist after you've sent in some submissions and asking you for you to come. Like, they're already interested. So knowing that, it's sort of an alley-oop. Once you've built up the experience and you're able to execute because you understand like, hey, this space is actually for me. It's not against me while I'm actually here. You begin to essentially sit into this different pocket. You start to perform more than you're worried about like the technicalities of the audition, which is actually kind of funny because in turn, what they're looking for is performance over anything, because they're going to take time to teach you the choreography later on. They're going to take time to iron out your solo or your freestyle, whatever it may be.
Oh, true.
But if you don't have charisma or you don't have, you know, adaptability or openness, these higher traits, these higher qualities, if those don't show through, then you actually, you know, can defeat yourself within the space. You can execute the moves, but if you have no essence or feeling when you're actually in the audition, a lot of the times what ends up happening is they just look right past you because they're not looking for a copy. They're looking for that star. They're looking for someone that has stardom to them, you know? And so sometimes that can come in the most simplest of ways. So over the years, the professional spaces have definitely been challenging for me to navigate because it's a lot. All eyes are on you and, you know, you have the spotlight, you have the limelight, and sometimes that gets the best of us, right? But as we mature in our craft, as we mature in life, they're one and the same. And you just bring that to the space. So that way you kind of can turn inside out and be like, hey, this is how I would perform. This is who I am. And that's going to be enough for the employer, the company, to view you and say like, hey, I'm getting an honest evaluation, or I'm able to give you an honest evaluation due to the sheer fact that you actually showed up. Not your skill, not your technique, but you actually showed up. And I think that sort of is the catalyst to succeeding in the audition space. Because then you can eradicate that idea of the yes and the no. Because most of the time, as we hear, we're going to get more no's than we are yeses. So what ends up happening is you don't even worry about that anymore. The win is the fact that you're remaining true to yourself in the most pressured of environments. So as you build, as you get experience, I guess like my growth within that space has been just learning how to be myself more, learning how to bring that to the table more, and not holding that back whatsoever.
Oh, dude, there was a lot of strong points in that. And one I really liked that you said right now was like, they want us to find that star, that the one who sticks out, right? Who's themselves. They got that essence. That's been a talk like kind of in the Crump community here these past few weeks, is like essence. And what does that mean? What does that entail? And me and one of the guys talked about it, matter of fact, last night. And it was like, you know, it's just you being yourself. It's your raw form of you being expressed through whatever dance it is, you know, whether it's crump, waving, ballet, whatever form, you know, whatever medium, you know, music, whatever, you know, it's that raw form of you coming out and really bleeding through the speakers. My man, Jesse Sykes, what a this podcast, my guy. Real quick, for everybody who doesn't know, but will be listening to this, tell them who you are, how old you are, and where you're from, man. And we'll keep this shit rolling.
Yeah, hell yeah. My name is Jesse Alexander Sykes. I am currently 31 years of age. I'm hella young. I'm just getting started. I come from Layton, Utah. Grew up a military brat, so ended up setting roots in Utah as a teenager, and that's where I started actually as a dancer. Yeah, man, it's been a wild ride so far. I found dance in the most random place. You know what I'm saying? Like to be able to go all over the world and realize like art is flourishing in most places. And then you go to a place like Utah is a different beast, man. And it's weird because when we first, you know, laid foot in Utah, my father got some orders to serve at Hill Air Force Base. The first thing I noticed, I was like, damn, I've been, you know, my parents are from New York, from Brooklyn. And I've traveled a lot at this point in my life, and I show up and I'm like, everyone's white. Yeah. And everyone's very conservative, and everyone's talking about this religion. Everyone's talking about being Mormon. Mm. When we first moved to Utah, the religion dominated all others. It was, I think it was like 91% was 91% of Utah's population was LDS. So granted, over time, obviously, especially with the base and cycles, generations change and all of that, people are moving, obviously, from the coasts inland. So they're bringing their culture and they're bringing their art with them. Now it's not as bad. But when I found hip hop, I was like, I found it here, of all places. Like, this is mad random. I'm like, the most conservative place ever. And so, I found dance. Like, I really found dance around 15, and I haven't looked back since, man.
Just took grasp of you, huh? It's infectious.
Yeah.
That feeling that dance gives us. Yeah, man. In Utah, like, yeah, whenever I think of Utah, I think of cold and Latter-day Saints, like, to be really honest, to be really, really honest. But that's another weird part. I think that, like, us as dancers, no matter like what generation I guess we're in or like where the population's at, music will find it and will find those rebels, you know, like,
yeah,
what was it like probably like 40 years ago, it was rock and roll music, you know, and everyone was just jamming to rock and roll. And then, you know, and then you had the rap and hip hop wave that kind of took precedent after that. so for you, 15, coming out of Utah, like, and you're in Vegas now. Right. Yeah, so how did we get right now? So how did we get from Utah to Vegas?
Oh, man. So I was so blessed because Utah actually gave me actually quite a pure experience when it comes to dance. My surrounding, I was surrounded by so many brilliant artists. And I do think because of the lack of culture, it made those that were taking those risks and going against the grain, it made their art that much stronger because they were already kind of not necessarily outcasted, but they were like the pulse of wherever they went, right? Like they brought places to life because people weren't used to it. So from clubbing in Salt Lake City, getting snuck in, I was like 15, 16 years old, and people would be like, nah, fuck it, you're coming in. Like, we're getting you in. It doesn't matter. To battles, to like, I used to go to a lot of raves to train with the Liquid dancers, and a lot of the B-boys would go to raves. I used to go to these events downtown in Salt Lake City, and being around that purity and having so many different places to sort of venture into with the craft and to expand upon it in like the most raw capacity too, because it wasn't like we had a bunch of teachers. It wasn't like we had OGs. There's no pioneers in the Utah community in that sense. We did have to outsource. So I got to this point maybe a couple years in where I'm like, damn, I gotta start traveling. Like, I'm hearing, you know, of these battles happening in Vegas. I'm having, you know, friends offering me rides to go to Cali. I'm having people say like, yo, let's hop on a flight and go to Texas. Let's go to these different places and get down with the culture outside of here, outside of Utah. And so around, I would say probably around like 20 is when I started just like unapologetically just getting in the car. I had no game plan. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to make this happen. I don't care. I don't really, you know, I don't need anyone to come with me. I don't need anyone. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to get in the car as much as I possibly can and go to these events, go to these battles, go take these classes, do what I need to in order to really nurture this thing that I was falling deeper and deeper into and more in love with, right? So getting to this point of traveling, being introduced into my journey as a dancer, like right when I hit 2021, I knew Utah wasn't home at that point. Because I was starting to experience like true and honest culture, and I was starting to meet pioneers. I was starting to meet OGs in these communities. I'm starting to take classes from greats, coming from no mentorship whatsoever. Like in Utah, the majority of our community was self-taught, or we were brought up next to one another. We were just kind of vibing with our peers, and that was our form of growth. There wasn't a lot of classes. There wasn't anyone like, hey, I'm pioneering a specific style or I'm pushing this. There was, you know, a handful of each style represented in our community. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't even popping at one point. There's barely any house dancers, no lockers. So the gems that we had in the community, like the one or two lockers and the couple house dancers, they were just down to go to the club and down to throw the session and to do those things, but they weren't teachers. Until this point now, fast forward where they're like, you know what, we need to introduce this to the next generation. Now they're teaching, but back then it was just raw exchanges that were helping us build. But then I started getting taught things and I started kind of blazing that trail of like, hey, I'm going to hop in the car. I'm going to go get roasted at this battle by someone that's 10 times better than anyone in our community. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to keep sharing that experience. All the things that I learn, I'm going to try to just give everything that I'm experiencing to our community, whether it's received or not. A lot of times it was purely through me channeling it in my movement. People are like, oh, something's different. Then they started asking questions. Because a lot of times, because classes weren't being taught regularly, you would go to teach a popping workshop and like two people would show up. Like I remember we brought Wiggles out and five people showed up. We brought Pop and Todd out, Boogie Frantic. Like you have like a handful of people at these classes because they weren't used to it. They didn't understand the gems that were being given in these spaces and the gems of humans that these people were. So I was like, you know what? This is a great route, and I can nurture this throughout my career. And geographically locating myself somewhere different would make more sense because I could start to kind of absorb and then conduct, right? So I was about 23, about to be 24 when I just started becoming super nomadic to the point to where I'd be like, oh, Colorado, cool, I'm gonna be there for 4 months. Oh, Portland and you know, Seattle, I'm gonna go chill up there for a couple months. And I just started actually moving around the states. I just kept going, and maybe that was my father's Air Force background, like kind of prepping me for these like quick little in and outs.
Yeah.
But once I started traveling like heavily by like 24, 25, I made the move to LA. When I moved to LA, that's when I kind of understood. I was like, damn, now there's like an industry surrounding me. There's, you know, opportunities to teach. There's opportunities to work as a dancer, and I'm starting to get a taste of getting paid for what I love, as opposed to just doing it and keeping it 100% based off of my starting point. Now I'm getting recognized as a mover, as a dancer, and I'm starting to lean more into the career side of it and trying to transition into that space, leaving the 9-to-5s and leaving just stuff that wasn't really creatively feeding my soul. And just got to the point where I'm like, you know what? LA wasn't really for me. Went back to Utah. I moved to New York. New York wasn't really for me. I came to Vegas one time. I was in a magic show. It was the most random thing ever, bro. It was like the dancers were super dope in the magic show, and then they were too dope and they took the dance out of the magic show and we became assistants. That's
Oh.
like, it was one of those we were taken away from the magicians, which I like understood, but at the same time I was like, damn, okay, that really tarnished my experience. So I left again
Okay.
and I went back to Utah and I finally was just like, okay, I've given so much here. And I kind of felt it. You know, you got to this point where I kind of like said my final goodbye to Utah. I headed south one more time and I go back from time to time. But Vegas just, it just makes sense for me. It makes sense in many ways. I can work here as a professional artist. I can go to see my crew, Wave Gang, in Los Angeles. A lot of my friends are in LA. A lot of my friends are here in Vegas. And the community in Utah has sort of done an entire generational cycle. So a lot of the people in Utah are brand new. So it's like I'll kind of just ping pong in between these three states now, but cost of living and that coupled with work relation, I was able to find a really good balance here in Vegas for myself that's helped me sustain this as a career ever since. Like I haven't worked a normal job in a very long time, which is a blessing to say. Yeah,
Oh,
man.
man. Yeah, and there's not many other careers you really I like I can't really think of many other careers when you think of like normal 9 to 5, like nurses and obviously military will like move around a lot. Dudes will
Right.
move around, here there, especially depending on their positions and ranks and stuff. Nurses, you'll see them, traveling nurses and stuff. But
Right.
dancers, bro, dancers do the like go to LA and sleep on somebody's couch for 3 months and
Yep.
then, hopefully book a job or two and end up somewhere, end up in
Yeah.
Washington or end up in Australia or end up over here. It's a crazy lifestyle, bro. And to think that like, people like you, my man Atrocity did it. Icon, little
Yep.
icon, my guy, fucking love Icon. There's
Same,
but
man.
there's yeah bro, there's a lot of people, man, and it's tight because I've definitely known about you for a long time, but I feel like over the past like year to 2 years, bro, I've just been seeing your work everywhere, like everywhere. Have you felt that? Have you felt like over these maybe like let's say like last 3 years you've been getting more busy, or is it just like you're building a bigger presence over social media? Like what do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, damn, dude, it's crazy. I kicked down the first wall for sure a couple of years ago. I think I started really kind of building the buzz around my art once I started battling more. Getting out to LA was probably the best thing that I could have done for my art at that time. With that, I started getting seen a lot more. But even then I was still getting all the no's. I was not booking the same jobs as my peers. I was still needing to put that work in. I had the tenacity. I was putting the work in. It was just not my turn. So I was just patiently waiting and celebrating my friends around me. And then a few years ago, I would say actually like right after pandemic, everything took off because even during the pandemic, I saw like a really big buzz around my name just based off of the fact that I was doing free classes the entire pandemic. So I was teaching waving and I would have, it was unreal. At first, it was, 10 people. Next thing you know, three classes later, 105 people signed into Zoom. And I'm like,
Oh,
what the
damn.
hell is happening? And I realized, especially once the global community had to sit still and was now scrolling more, looking to move more. And the only way they could do that, aside from, self-created space, they were looking for guidance. And I've always just been, inside out with my art. I've always been that way. I told myself if I was going to do this, I was going to do it from the bones out. And once people started kind of experiencing the way that I shared, because I definitely don't teach dance. Even though it's under the veil of dance, we're talking on a lot more lot more of a spiritual plane with my movement and just the way that I share it, a lot of people resonated with it. So what ended up happening is through sharing so consistently, I was teaching a class every single Sunday during pandemic. I didn't miss. And you could come in for free. Like you literally didn't have to pay. And what ended up happening is as soon as the pandemic started to alleviate a little bit, people were like, I want to bring you to my country. I want to bring you out, or I want to book you to judge. Like one, the way that you're of service is mad inspiring, but two, like, I don't think you even realize how much you're impacting a lot of people's lives. So like, let's put you at the forefront. So that way you can kind of have that in front of your face. So that way, like, if anything, we can just continue to amplify Jesse Sykes, which was the greatest gift of all. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's such a blessing for people to trust me to come into their space and share what I share. So I would say like post pandemic, even though it's, I mean, obviously COVID's still around, but like now things are open, now things are flourishing again. That's when I really started kind of taking off. And then social media, like it's just been organically developing and building over time. Like I don't give a fuck about algorithms, or I don't really care. I'll post 7-minute videos on Instagram or like even now the TikToks introduce longer content. I'm like, hell yeah. Like I'm going to make you watch something for 10 minutes. Like I don't care. And if 100 people see it, cool. If 10,000, cool. I don't care. It's all just like journal entries for me is how I view it. And I think just kind of being able to like open up a page of my journal and share it with the world has been something where people are just like, who is this guy? He's a fucking anomaly. And he's moving in a way that is sort of refreshing for the community. Because, you know, a lot of people talk about skills and politics and all this, that, and third, but there's not too many raw artists stepping into spaces like battles or stepping into teach classes with actual depth. There's a lot that's missing. And I'm one of many that's starting to kind of just be like, you know what, like, let's do this differently. Let's shake the room a little bit. Let's challenge the room. Let's uplift one another. Let's build with one another. And I think just being able to be real and be, you know, focused and diligent within this pursuit of igniting that in others, I think is why people trust and begin to offer the space to me. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, it's the greatest blessing because I didn't ever see it coming. And next thing you know, like I've been able to travel the whole world the last 3 years, just consistently too. Yeah. Like I'm in another country every month and it's really wild. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm like, dude, I fell in love at a cipher in Layton, Utah. And I would have never guessed that I would be where I'm at right now. But I think the biggest thing is just like, I fucking love it so much. And that exudes from me and people feel that. And they look at that and they want to be a part of that. And I want them to have the same quality. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I think there's just more humanness needed within, these spaces. There's more humility and humbleness needed in these spaces. So it's even weird talking about kind of like where I'm at right now, because it was never expected. But I think just, you know, having a good head on your shoulders gets you really far.
Yeah.
And it's honest. You know what I'm saying?
And I mean, dude, trust me. And it's well earned and highly deserved. And to think like, I do remember seeing you post like about free classes, and I remember seeing some of the homies posting about that you were doing like free classes, and I was like, and you know, in the time where people need money the most and like everything is upside down, you know, you're having a young man share this information and share this for free. And that's hard to come by. And especially when somebody's talented and has a certain resume, you really don't see that as often, like, you know.
Yeah.
So to see you still be down to earth like that was cool, man. It was cool. And so everything that you're experiencing from that point here, you know, was definitely, well, it's good karma just being cashed in, you know.
Yeah, it's a cycle, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, we as dancers, we always talk about that exchange, you know, like. And I don't see why, then like you were saying, like more love and more humility in these spaces. Cause it's like, we talk about these exchanges that we have with each other all the time, but why don't we also understand that that's how our like karmatic values work? Like if I'm doing good for you and doing good to you and wishing well upon you, then it's going to come back to me. And if I'm being a dick to you and if I'm being shady and all this other stuff, bro, and trying to scheme,
it's gonna come back.
It's going to come back, bro. You pay that due. That due gets paid eventually, bro. Like it really does. Yeah, that's definitely something that I hope we start seeing. Cause you know, I'm a crumper man. And so our community gets a little wild and it's just so aggressive, man. And it's just like, guys, we could be tough, but at the same time, let's just be cool about it. You know, let's all just keep this real chill.
Absolutely.
And man, you recently traveled to, it was China, right?
Yeah. I'm coming off of a tour. Basically I went Korea to Australia to China. So
what was that like?
Back to back. To be honest, I got back from China last week, so I'm like still downloading. And to speak about the blessings, like it put China specifically put it really into perspective for me, because I love getting to sort of the grassroots level with the community everywhere I travel. Even if it's me spending my own money, or sometimes it's like I'll make the money from the gig or whatever at that country, in that country, and I'll spend it to stay and actually get to know the people, you know? So I'm just like, you know what? That's priceless to me. So in China, we were able to do some work with the community out there. And I was able to have a few days afterwards to just really, I taught a class and I was able to kick it with the community. I was able to kick it with the dancers to the point to where I taught a 2-hour workshop and then we're sitting there for, you know, a lot of time after just breaking bread, talking. And the reason why I say it puts it into perspective for me is in China specifically, and whether it's China, like the main territory, or Hong Kong and Macau, they are shunned for choosing dance as a career. They're shunned for choosing art as a career. So a lot of these dancers are expressing to us, I was out there with King from the Future Kings, NRJ from Dragon House, and Dance Find and Sandbox. And they're expressing to us like, yeah, our families don't support us anymore. We don't have communication with our parents anymore. Dance literally is our lifeline at this point. And we have to work normal jobs and sort of hide from society when we decide to share our gift, you know? And our self-expression is actually suppressed due to this sort of standard that society puts upon us. And I mean, that's not necessarily extremely common, but you start to hear that like in some of these countries you travel to, where like whether they're completely outcasted for choosing this path or they're not supported whatsoever when they make these choices, you know? And then you watch them dance and you're like, damn, man, this person is so raw. This person is so them. This person is like untouched. You meet these gems in these communities where it's like, you watch them, but it's also sad because the dance is coming from pain primarily. Like if it was a pie chart, it would be like 99% pain, you know? And so it checks you because you're like, here I am over here traveling to your country, getting paid X amount of dollars. And I'm like in a 5-star hotel and you're sitting here fighting for your life, dancing, you know? And so it like just really puts it into perspective for you, you know? Cause sometimes it's literally all these people have, all these individuals have. And I think that's why I operate from that similar space, as if I don't have anything. So I just keep giving and giving and giving and giving. Because like for me, like it, like what, like we were talking about, it's a cycle. Like you give to them, they're going to give to the next person in their community. And they're going to inspire that next generation to seek self-expression, no matter how hard that path may be. So these trips, they were so profound. They were so unique in their own, but But to end in China, where it was just like, dude, this is all they got. Like, it was, it just put everything to this like dot of perspective that just like gave me so much clarity coming back here. Like, I'll be damned if I complain. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I am so privileged, and it shows through and through within all of this. So like to not understand that, to not respect that, and to operate from a space of service more than often is my responsibility. Like, if I'm not like acknowledging that, I am now doing this community a disservice. I'm doing those individuals that I had the blessing to really like connect and mesh with, I'm disrespecting them now. You know what I'm saying? So like, for me, it's like I'm experiencing places in the rawest of capacities. And that just like brings it back to like the reason why we even fucking do this in the first place. You know what I'm saying? It's literally saving people's lives. And until you see someone that's being saved by it daily, you know, and you peel back all the comforts that we have, and then you see someone that's like, yeah, no, I could lose my house tomorrow because of this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, damn. I'm like, whoa, that's wild. Like, because I didn't choose to do something else with my life, because I made a free choice, and here I am because of it. It's like, damn. It just checks you, you know what I'm saying? So I'm coming back from that. And the irony of it is I come back to a booking in Vegas, I come back to a job, and I'm just like, man, I'm there. And now I'm on this job, and I'm like excited as fuck, and no one else is. And I'm just like, yo, wake up. But then I have to understand, like, they haven't seen this. They don't know what that side is like. They haven't been to these third world countries or these countries where people literally don't have any way or means to express themselves out publicly. Like, even social media is so controlled over there in Hong Kong, like to the point to where even if they wanted to try to like break through, it's so much harder for them. So like, I come home and I'm just like, all right, guys, like, come on, like, enjoy these spaces. Like, it's a privilege.
Yeah. I really don't think, like, especially young American kids, bro, like, they just do not know, one, how good we got it out here. Mm-hmm. Like, every space in the creative arts is going to be hard to break through. It's a hard path. But yeah, there's places like I'll see videos of like guys crumping in like India, and they're like barefoot. Mm-hmm. I'm like, holy fuck, dude. And we complain about dancing outside, and they're barefoot. Yeah. Bro, like, come on, champ. Like, come on, guys, let's get it together. Like, it's okay. Yeah. Yes, it's late, it's kind of cold, I know. Yes, we're not in a studio, but we can get this session going right here in this parking lot. Like, it's
yep,
I promise you, it's all good, family. And that's just me being like in tune with myself enough to know like where my privilege starts. Like, you know, I yeah. know where my privilegeness starts in the grand scheme of the world, you know, and then especially living in a place like in China. Yeah. Like, I always hear about, you know, stories about how the government is involved with their social medias. Like, they have a limit on their TikToks or stuff. You hear like stuff like that. So I just couldn't imagine being an artist there, where, you know, you have some dudes here, you know, who do all the doctoring on their posts, and they got every overlay and every little scheme on it. I couldn't imagine them trying to do that same work out in China, where they couldn't post all day long. They couldn't be, you know, with the algorithm all day long. Oh my God.
It's wild, man. It's wild.
What is something like, so now that you're coming back and you definitely see like, dude, you've had such a story. It's so crazy. So you see like these privileges that we have and the benefits like that you get from dance, right? The benefit of being able to travel and meet these people, make these experiences, you know, and live this artist's life. Like, if you could look back at young Jesse Sykes, you know, young 15-year-old Jesse, what would you tell him? What would be a little piece of advice you would let him know?
Damn, that's a good question. I would say, man, I would tell him to dance from a space where it's like the first time every time. Because Lil Jesse was so malleable. Lil Jesse, as I mean, as we are as like young teens and young adults, you know, like we're so molded by our surroundings instead of creating our own molds or having our own perspectives, right? Lil Jesse was a people pleaser, especially in his dance. I'd tell him, I'm like, look, you need a one, you need to dance like it's the very first time. Because that first time I stepped out, I remember it to this day. It was, I moonwalked on a stage at an assembly in my junior high. And I just remember, that's the only move I knew. And I wasn't even a dancer at that point. It was my seventh grade year. And I was just like, screw it, I'm doing this. And then a few years later, I fell into a cypher and I'm like, oh shit, this is actually a real thing. Like, this is crazy. But that one moment being rekindled every time. Mm-hmm. And the second thing I would tell him is slow down and enjoy the ride. Like, really slow down. Like, there's no rush to it, you know, because if you're in that moment, like, I really wish I could just go back and like be a fly on the wall watching myself doing that moonwalk. You know what I'm saying? And checking myself even to this day, like, because as you get older, the question shifts, or the statement shifts, I should say, from do it like it's the first time that you've ever done it. It starts to add the other side, the opposite, the polarity of it. Do it like it's going to be your last time.
Oh, you know?
So like for little Jesse, I would have been like, yo, keep having firsts. Keep having first. And while you're in that first, slow time down so you can enjoy it. So that way you're not so pressured and molded by your surroundings. I would also tell Jesse to move from the inside out as opposed from the outside in.
That's beautiful. Inside out. I like that. Inside out, because that's kind of where I got like corpse from, right? Corpse, I used it as an acronym, was Crump offers our people self-expression. And corpse, you know, is once you take everything else off, you know, you're left with the corpse. And so inside out, I like that dance from the inside out.
That's fucking raw, dude.
Yeah, man. Dude, and I think a lot of people I ask that question, they generally have that similar answer of like, you know, I wish we would have just been more patient with it. You know, if God, somebody said it to me one time, was I would have told my younger self to match my eagerness with my patience. And I'm like, yeah, dude, like I wish there was, you know, especially as we get older, there's people that we lose, you know, there's people who I've danced beside who've passed away. And it's like, I wish I would have just enjoyed those sessions with them a little bit more. Like, it was a good time. It was a great, great time. We had great fucking great times. But if I would have known, you know, if I would have known then what I know now, I would have just sat with them a little bit longer. I would have made that car drive. You know, you get people who are always like, oh, the session's so far. It's like, man, shut up, bitch. Just come on. Let's go.
Get in the car. Come on.
Come on. Stop being a puss, dude. We're going to go to the session. We'll be back by 2, bro. It'll be all right. because I live like an hour and a half sometimes from like the 818 sessions. And I would be driving down there like 2-3 times a week down to NoHo to go dance. Yeah, like when you were saying that earlier, I was like, yeah,
you get it. Yeah.
Every dancer has to hit that nomad part where we're driving 2-3 hours to a session and then maybe 2-3 hours back home, or maybe crashing that night because there's an event the next day. So it's like, we're about to make a weekend out of this, boys. Let's go. Exactly.
We're in the car. We are in the car.
Man, matter of fact, dude, I was telling some people, you know, like some of my coworkers and shit, they're like, I was like, yeah, I'm doing this podcast, woo woo woo. And dude, I showed them your video. I think it was from your battle with Ronnie, with Dead End. Dude, that thing's got like a couple million views, fam.
It's that one. That one's wild.
Like, what did you think when you just saw the notifications, when you see those views hitting, like, I think it is at a mil, bro. I'm pretty sure the last time I looked at it, it was like 3 million or like 2 million. I was like, holy fuck.
Man, what an experience. Okay. So I have like two major takeaways from having a social media blow up. So on the opposite side of things, so not on Instagram, but on TikTok, it's at 29.5 million.
Whoa.
I got from one video on TikTok, I got 300,000 followers on TikTok within the span of 48 hours.
Jesus.
Now, a lot of people would be like, hell yeah, like it's happening. For some reason, it made me feel really off. It made me feel almost as if too many people were watching me now. And so I've been really, and it was confronting in both good and bad ways, because part of me was like, okay, cool. Like, I've been posting and posting with no expectations. I don't care about the following or anything like that. I'm not going to play to the algorithm or follow the trends. I never have, and I never will. So it was like, oh, cool. Like, now I do have these eyes on me that are seeing another side of the craft. They're seeing someone express from a more vulnerable capacity. They're able to connect to what I would consider, you know, the opposite side of social media, where people don't really care about it. So that what they share is real and it's genuine, it's them. You get a piece of me every time you see a video, as well as in my captions and everything like that. But in a way, I'm also like quite an antisocial person, despite the career path that I've chosen. Like, I'm the type of person at battles, I'm in the back corner. Like, I'm yeah. observant. I'm very observant. So I'm going to take a step back almost always. So to have all of these eyes on me out of nowhere, and the way that people just like take advantage of that access to you, especially if your profiles on social media platforms are public, just the wildest DMs, like the craziest comments, like things that just like almost kind of dehumanize you. And also people that were dehumanizing, specifically one of the girls in the back that was hyping me in that clip. So then me feeling confronted in the sense of like, now I'm defending the space, as well as like, cool, it's got a lot of traction and people are like watching my art now on a much higher degree. They're digesting it quicker, all these different things. But I like went into like a defensive mode when that blew up. And so I think there's pros and cons to those things. Obviously, on the opposite side, the pro is I blew up on social media representing myself honestly. You know, I didn't have to follow a trend to do that or sell myself out to do that, right? The video that blew up the most was an iconic moment for me in my dance career, and an exchange that I honored and respected so much. Like, Ronnie is family to me, and to be able to also battle at Brutal City, which is primarily a Crump event, and go against a Crumper who is like heavily involved in community and really represents something pure, I was like, I want to go to another level against this man. Like, I'm looking for that honorable death, and I'm looking for that push. I'm looking for that edification. So knowing that this brilliant conversation happened between the two of us, and that's where the eyes are going, you know, hopefully one, that pours the eyes into, that pours the attention into that event. So Brutal is able to have him and his fam receive some more love for the next one, you know, and Ronnie. And like, I'm thinking more so like, okay, cool. This kind of trickles outward. This trickles to the event. This trickles to the people that are in the clip behind me. This trickles into other spaces. So I thought it was really beautiful how that could be a benefit for the community. And I think like the way that I represent myself, I would say, is a good representation of the community as well. So all these commenters that don't necessarily know much about the dance are all watching this video, and they're seeing like, okay, this guy's like a normal ass dude. Like, artists aren't like artists could be more understood, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people think that, oh, they just don't understand me. But like, if you're not letting them in, they're not going to get that opportunity to understand you. So for me to be this like bones out kind of person, I thought it was, that was the, I guess, a beautiful pro within it though. You know, but yeah, I definitely for like the week that that thing was just climbing, I like shielded my entire space. I was like, I don't want none of this attention. I actually turned off notifications entirely. I don't even have notifications on any of my social media anymore because of it.
Oh,
Like it
wow.
just, it's overwhelming. And I mean, and you think about it, like on Instagram, like I ain't shit on Instagram. I ain't shit on TikTok compared to some of these people have like 30 million followers. And each
Yeah.
video gets like 2 to 5 million views and all this stuff. And I'm like, damn, that's stressful. That's
Yeah.
really stressful. It's like the dark side of social media, like a dark side of social media. So yeah, two different takeaways for sure on that.
Yeah, 'cause dude, I mean, when I first saw it, I was like, "Holy smokes!" Like the round was insane, right? And then, I mean, I try not to get too caught up in whose videos are doing what numbers, and this, I barely care
Right.
for myself. You know, I don't get wrapped up in that. But when I looked at it, I was like, "Holy smokes! That's viral. That's as viral as viral's getting, dude." And one thing that really got me was one of my buddies I had showed it to. He goes, "Yeah, man, I really like how he dances." I was like, "Well, yeah, dude, he's fucking good. Like, you know, he's a good dancer, bro." He goes, "No, he's like, he doesn't dance with any gimmicks. He's like, there's no gimmick here. There's no like," he's like, "I was expecting to see like, you know, like maybe somebody do like a hat move or like a shoe thing." I was like, "Oh no." I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Jesse really doesn't get into that. You're really not one of those people, huh? You're just all body movement."
Yeah, I feel like in a way I've tried to, in my journey of dance, master the connection to self and pour that essence into the space. So even to the point to where like to play on the gimmick side of things like wouldn't even be honest. You know what I'm saying? Like nothing's preconceived. I don't share any choreographed work, like whatsoever. Every single performance, every single battle, every single clip that I share from like the living room or whatever, it's all improvised. And I think that's what helps me remain true to myself and allow that essence to come through more than anything. I'm not a very flashy, gimmicky person in general. I have a big admiration for people that can build their whole set or build, you know, combos and have their material and all of that. But my material is my soul. So, and that's it. And that's enough. Because who am I to say, like, okay, I have this super preconceived, prepped movement that I'm going to bring to the space. What if the space doesn't feel aligned with that preconceived like movement and this now kind of causes me to disconnect, if anything. I'm raw in the moment every single time because that's the way that I also honor the space the most, you know, and that's the way that I honor myself in the space the most. So that's a really dope takeaway from the homie. Like, I appreciate that a lot because, yeah, it's for me, it's more about quality of movement and not hiding behind anything.
And I mean, even for me, man, like Crump, I tried to do the hat trick thing, and I really tried, and I just sucked at it, and I had to be real with myself. I had to be real with myself, man. Like, this just doesn't read well. Like, even, you know, you get into the lab sometimes and you might record it, and there's some stuff you're like, oh, you know, like it's kind of weird, but you're like, you know what, I'm gonna explore that. And then there's other stuff you do where you're like, I'm never going to do that ever again. Like, that just does not feel right on my body. Like, it just, I trust my body. I trust what my body tells me. If that movement, wherever my leg is or my arm or whatever, wherever it's at, if it feels icky, then I just don't go there. Like, it's like, no. But if it feels strange or awkward, yeah, okay, now that I'll play around in a little bit, you know? What would you say is, matter of fact, I guess that's a good question to ask too, is what would you say is a part, like, I guess, like the beginning parts of your creative process, like that battle with Ronnie, like what did you do to prep? Like, what was that creative journey leading up into that battle?
Oh man. So in a way also, and I don't think anyone's ever asked me, you know, anything of that sort pertaining to that battle specifically. So this is dope. Both of those songs, I chose them specifically because both of those songs are very iconic moments that I've showcased in the past too. So there's sort of like, they both are milestone moments for me. I danced to that Future Crypto track, which was the first rounds, actually at Absolute Zero. So another Crump event in Colorado. And it was the first time that I sat on like a really fucking legendary panel. I was sitting next to Outrage and Tie Dyes.
Yes, I do remember that one now. I do remember that
and,
one.
And this was the first time that I was being paid to judge and fully covered. And just Droid Fam took the best care of me. Dylan's an incredible human. Brings me out, just really trust. Just really trust me. He's like, I trust you to put you next to these two veterans, these two just legendary movers. And I wanted to go crazy. I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. But like, to have that energy surrounding me, I was like, I want to choose a track that's just legendary for me in that moment. Something that I could really kind of like, full throttle, just express myself with. So that one, and then the next track is called Caffeine. That song is actually one of the first songs that I got in my very first battle that I won in LA.
Ooh. So
I won an event called the Battle Games, which actually had my old crewmate. He's still my crewmate in a different crew now, but I was able to get to this battle in LA and end up getting invited to be a part of the Lot Original, which was Slim Boogie's crew.
Okay.
So Slim formed this collective of super genius artists. So those two songs had deep impact in my journey. And now I'm kind of in a way, like as I kind of shed this skin and go into this metamorphosis as my career is blossoming, I'm actually going through and paying homage to all of my most significant moments in my career by revisiting them in the current present moment. So even down to like, I'm getting to the point to where when I do like judges showcases and things like that, I'm like dancing to my father's favorite song, or I'm dancing to like my mother's favorite song, or I'm like doing things that really just like kind of honor my journey. And that's really it. There's no like, I'm not going in there studying Ronnie. I'm not going in there thinking, you know, that I have to put on a show. I'm going in there literally in the moment, just giving myself permission. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think like permission has been a big theme in my career, like just allowing myself to jump on two instead of three. And just allowing myself to amplify the moment, you know? So I stay ready. I think that's really kind of what it is. Like I stay ready. So then all it is just a choice. Mm. You know, cause I know the track, don't know what I'm gonna do to it, but I just, you know, I just run and jump and I don't hesitate. That's really it.
Man, and speaking of like, You were speaking about how like you were paying homage to different parts of your journeys, even though through some of the songs you choose. And I think if I remember right, there was a video you had posted recently with a song I think you dedicated to your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through that one, because that video was fucking sick, bro. And the song choice was, I was like, yo, this is great. I think I added it to my Spotify playlist after that. I was like, this song's a banger. Why did I not ever think of this?
Well, it's crazy because you're like, this song's a banger. And then people are going to be like, what song is it? Dust in the Wind by Kansas. Like a banger in an entirely different way. I feel like I could get a lot of backlash for the choices of songs I'm using for sure in these battles, because obviously like a lot of this is freestyle battling and you know, people could argue me like, well, that's not hip hop. And I get that. I say, fuck it. Like, I think, to be honest, there's not a lot of art and there's not a lot of heart in battles anymore. And so what ends up happening is people have this just calculated methodology going in. They're so strategic that, like, in a way, a lot of times we don't ever even see them when they're battling, or we don't even really see them in the space. And then they're coming up and they're like, feedback, feedback, feedback. Like, and I'm like, who are you? Like that's the most important thing that you need to bring to the table, because all of your strategy, all of this shit is actually exposing you. You can tell that you're thinking you're not connected, you know? So for me, I've like, one, to honor these spaces that I'm really getting this privilege to be in. Like, I'm sitting on a panel and really connected to each and every dancer, like just honoring them. I'm like, what better way to actually showcase my love through honoring myself the same way that I encourage them to honor themselves, you know? So for me, I know my art is a little bit different. It's a little more raw. It's a little more, you know, theatrical and real. And so with that being said, stepping into this idea of now starting to kind of create these milestones, these moments of paying homage to like major influences in my life, like my father, for example. Kansas is his favorite band, and Dust in the Wind is one of his favorite songs. And when he speaks about it, he speaks about the idea that like we're both equally significant and insignificant, you know, and being able to break the cycle of our insignificance allows us to believe. And once we believe, it allows us to expand, right? And in the song, I mean, just ultimately, the lyrics are just so powerful. They're so simplistic. So in a way, like with that being one of my father's favorite songs and one of his favorite bands, and how my dad operates, my dad is just, he's like a man of like many words, but then sometimes he's the man of like very few words. But no matter what, everything he says is so powerful. And, you know, I tried to embody my father, you know, I tried to put myself in his shoes in that performance and perform for him and perform with him, you know? So, I thought it was sort of the perfect moment for that. I thought it was a great moment in time for me, to take that dive. I have a whole series of songs that I want to do that pay homage to my family members specifically, like some of their favorite songs. But yeah, just like I fell in love with that song because of my father. I just wanted to like bring something raw into the space. So those things coupled together is what created, what birthed that performance. And everything that happened was just my experience with my father and him being my hero, just unearthing itself as I was moving. Because even that's improvised. I just know the song really well, but all of my work is improvised. And so, yeah, it was a really special moment for me, because he was also, he wasn't able to actually attend the event because he's still up north in Utah, but he was definitely with me in the room, which was something that was really, really special. So just wanted to dedicate some of it to my father, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man, that's beautiful, bro. That's beautiful. And I think that, There's a special space I think a lot of artists try to get to and only very, very few really ever obtain. But it's like that ability to, when the music's playing, no matter what song and no matter what style you do, you can find yourself in it and you're able to move. And I think a lot of people spend their whole life, especially freestylers, you know, I think when you're thinking about like choreography, there's a small cheat because you're kind of planning all these moves to all these different moments in the music. But for freestylers, it's always, you know, you always hear, oh, I don't really like this song, or oh, it's too fast, or oh, it's too slow. And it's like, well, you know, if you're a real mover, just put a song on and start moving. Let's see what you got. Let's see what comes out. You know what I mean? Let's see what comes out. And now knowing, you know, everything you do is improvised, watching that video was sick. I was like, this is so cool, so touching, you know, something dedicated to someone. But then now that it's all improvised, it brings that video to a whole new, another level, dude. It's awesome.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Of all the battles, of all the performances, of everything you've done, what do you think has been your favorite moment? Or yeah, let's just say that favorite moment for Jesse.
battle or performance, or can it just be anything dance-wise?
Anything dance-wise.
Oh man. Okay, cool. I can pinpoint that. Performance-wise, I don't know. But moment in my dance career that like really just kind of like brought it all home for me. I was out in Panama for World of Dance. It was 2019. And I've seen the world at this point. I've been traveling a bunch. I've been all over. I've met thousands of dancers at this point, and just kind of going back to that idea of like I started really kind of like with the club and like going to raves and like partying as a dancer, I was noticing as I was traveling and going around everywhere, like parties and clubs were low-key dying. Like people weren't socially approaching the dance anymore. It was no longer about socializing. It was more so about skills, politics, earning accolades, working as a professional artist. And that started to kind of tarnish my experience, right? And I was noticing it in the community. I was like, damn, the community's just focusing on maybe some of the wrong things. I included in that, I was in Panama. I went to this place called, I want to say it's called the Light Chapel. I could be wrong. But some of the local Panamanians, they took me to this club, bro. And I shit you not, it was the most powerful moment. It was so raw to me. But it's like 3 in the morning. We're in this club. And they're playing just crazy music the whole night. But I remember this one track came on, is definitely something that maybe was like culturally recognized. Like they all knew the song. They every single person, right? I'm standing in the middle of this club. There's easily 1,000 people in this like Whitechapel club, right? And I'm literally standing in the middle. I'm the only person that was able to stay a little bit longer. Like I said, I like to stay a little bit longer and just like and really like get to know people and like get to know their community and what they're all about. So it was the greatest lesson. I'm standing in the middle of like 1,000 people. And they're all doing all the grooves to this song. Like the song is like kind of like Soulja Boy or like whatever, like how we always had songs that outline dances. Like there's dances that went hand in hand. So they're doing all of these dances that go to this track. You just see this wave of people just doing everything. But I'm looking around. Like I'm literally, it's one of those moments where you're just kind of like, you're like, wow, I've arrived. I'm here on Earth. I'm here in this moment. And I spin in a circle to just kind of view it. And not only is the DJ doing the grooves, the bartenders are dancing, the security guards are doing the movement. Like everyone is dancing collectively. And the frequency that I felt in that moment, it was like a black hole opened and sucked me in, and I was just like totally fine with it, to the point where like I kind of like my physicality just like my physical self just like kind of dissolved. And I felt like I was just like floating over the club, watching everyone just joyous and connected and one. And it brings it back to those moments of like, man, dance really can just help us harmonize with self and with our environment and with others. And that social side of dance is what I really care about the most. Like, I think that's why I also express myself in the way that I do, because I'm like, I'm trying to like speak to you, whether it's through the lens or the realm of like deep expression, or if it's just pure joy or whatever it may be. Like, something just clicked in that moment. It was like in that exact moment, I knew that I would do this for the rest of my life. And it was like the perfect surfacing for me, because I felt like at that moment in the community, I was noticing a lot of people were drowning because they were focusing on the wrong things, creating tension and pressure and in their existence within the community. I felt like I got air for the first time in a while. But it wasn't just like normal air, you know what I'm saying? It was like air from the ether. It was like air from another dimension. And I was just like, shit, it all makes sense. Like it made me feel the same way that I was able to move with everyone on that moonwalk that first time I ever danced in front of someone.
Dang.
I was like, yo, these two moments coming together, like, it was mind-boggling. And I wasn't actually, and the beauty of it is you scope out, I wasn't even dancing. And it like put everything, it literally like put it back into perspective for me too. Like, I've always been a big believer that's not about me, and that's why I'm of service. And as my biggest like success in life is to be of service, you know, and to be able to say that I've been of service for fucking 18 years now in this craft. Like, I've always just like, here, take it all. Like, I want you to have it as well. Like, it's not about me. That moment was not about me. They would have continued to do that if I was there or not. And they're still doing it. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like one of those moments where I'm like, damn, this is community. This is unity. This is collective consciousness, you know? And I was like, yo, like, and to also be, I was like, to even add more depth to it, I was out there at a time where the government and civilians were really at war with one another, like to the point to where, while we're going to this club, my homie Marcellus, he's telling me, he's like, pay attention, like look around while we're like even taking this Uber, you know, to get to this club. Every single corner had government officials with fully automatic weapons, just chilling, waiting for something to pop off, waiting for someone to do something. So you're sitting there. It was like the biggest like middle finger to the government at the same time too. And it was just like, they did not have a care in the world. Like their lives just were so vibrant in that moment. Everyone was so vibrant in that moment. I was like, damn, I feel like I'm standing in the sun. Like, there's so much energy like around me. So it's just like moments like that have just reminded me of my purpose within all of it. You know what I'm saying? My purpose is to be of service, so I could witness things like that. So that way I can tell people about shit like that, to be like, hey, I understand you need a lab. I understand you need to train ridiculously long. I know you want these accolades, or you're pursuing this to make it a career and all of this, but I'm like, but go somewhere and step outside of yourself and witness the joy this shit brings into our lives. Like, witness the purity and how it can like really heal the world, to be honest, how it can glue things together. Like, go and do that instead of worried about how you're going to perform at a battle, or how you're going to perform in your class, or whatever it may be. Like, it just checked me in the most beautiful way. Like I said, it's just like this air that I needed, you know.
Bro, there is something, and I've talked with people about this at length, and none of us have been able to describe it quite, like, you know, quite right yet to me. But there's just an energy, bro, that dancing brings into a room. And I think that's like a part of what causes those who catch the addiction, you know, yourself, me, the beasts, you know, all these other people that we know, like, good God, Boogie Frantic, these dudes, everybody, bro, the people who really get who catch that addiction to dance, there's that certain feeling that happens. Like, while it's happening, like, while it's happening right now, you know, you got a couple people, or you got a room full of people, and they're just jamming, bro. Like, and it doesn't have to be at a session. It could be at a house party, but everybody is just grooving and the music is hitting right. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of look around and it's happening. I don't know what that is. I don't know what to call that, but it's, to me, that's just dance. Like, that's dancing, that vibe.
Yeah. That's what it's about, man. Like, that to me is, it just makes it all so worth it, you know? And I think, like, we go on this journey and seek this self-mastery and, like, try to be aware and try to be open to experience. And we work so diligently at this, hopefully. Like, we really work on our shit so that way when we get to those moments, we don't miss them. So we're able to kind of remove ourselves entirely, so that way we can actually open our eyes, you know, and open our hearts to feel those frequencies. Because that, to me, is like, that's why, like, if you really talk to people too, a lot of the times their starting point, their root is a moment like that, where the like where they felt that they got that infection, right? They're like, damn, like someone made me feel something that was bigger than myself that I couldn't describe, but it felt so familiar. It felt so safe. It felt like I was at home for the first time. You know what I'm saying? And I like to call it, I like to specifically call these things moments of arrival. And we have them throughout our career. We have them throughout our life. But it's like we re-arrive at our home. You know, it's like the feeling of getting home after a long trip, or like the feeling of laying in bed for the first time. You've missed your bed for like months on end or weeks on end or whatever it may be. Or like the hug of a certain person, the warmth from a certain person, words from a certain person, like or a certain song. Like those things are like moments of arrival. And I feel like everyone had a moment of arrival to start. It's like, wow, I'm here. And a lot of the times it's people that are addicted to it that help you arrive.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they pass the baton to you. Yeah. And sometimes you're not ready for it. So you don't know what to do with it. So you're like, I've arrived. And then you like, and then you're not able to actually fully like immerse yourself within it. But sometimes those moments are so large that you have no choice but to submerge yourself within it. And then next thing you know, you're like, holy shit, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Like dance has that transcendent power.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Go Super Saiyan. I'm just telling you. Oh my God. Yeah. I was, matter of fact, I was saying that on the podcast last night. Was one of the funniest things I ever heard was somebody, you know, I'm trying to like push through this round and everyone's telling me, keep going. And I hear someone, this dude show off goes, come on, Corpse, I'm trying to see you transcend. And I was like, all right.
Like shit, come on. Just for you, man.
Just for you. That one was funny. That one sticks with me. That one definitely sticks with me.
That's some real hype right there. That's some real hype right there.
Listen, Jesse, bro, I don't want to keep you too long, and I've enjoyed this conversation way too much, man. And I want to say thank you again for coming on the show. I definitely hope we get to do a part two one day, man. But before we sign out, is there anything that you would like to leave the people with, you know, like a Jesse's Gym of the Night or any kind of shows or anything you want to plug, man? This is a perfect moment for it.
Man, I just want to say thank you for having me, man. And what you're doing is so special. I think like, I'm a huge advocate in conversation. And for conversation, especially as we expand more and more and the community gets more attention, I think people's stories and the way that we share them are just as important as what you see being channeled and in the movement. So what you're doing is huge. In my classes and in, you know, on panels, I'm just trying to generate conversations all the time, because I think that side is not nurtured enough. And I think that also is partially why our communities kind of have this like poverty mindset, because we're not speaking out enough. People aren't getting to really actually fully know us. And so what they see is the only thing that they're going to digest. But once they start hearing stories like yours and mine, it's like extremely powerful, because someone could listen to this and be like, whoa, now when I actually watch you move, I understand it to a different degree. Now I can connect to it. Now I can support it more because I understand it more. So like, before I go, I want to just congratulate you on what you're doing, because this is huge. And I think it could be simple. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people could be like, oh yeah, it's just another podcast. You know what I'm saying? But like specifically an artist creating a podcast is, it's shaking existence as we know it. Because not too many artists are doing things like this. They're not taking that extra step to be like, hey, let's tell some stories. I think dancers and artists are some of the greatest storytellers ever, you know? And a lot of times we don't get the chance to share our stories. So I just want to say thank you for having me and for getting people to share their stories with you. You know, I think that's beyond what we normally experience with this. You know what I'm saying? So no shameless plugs, nothing like that. I just, I look forward to part two. If, you know, whoever tuned in and whoever's going to listen to this, you know, thank you for your time and your energy as well, because you could be doing anything, but you're rocking with us right now, you know? And I think that, yeah, I'm just excited. I feel like I'm just starting, you know, and it's one of these, things where it's like, even in conversations like this, we've arrived, you know, now I'm going to cherish this in my next session, and that's going to trickle out to the next people, and I'm going to tell people about it. And it's just, it's a ripple effect, you know? So I'm excited to expand from this, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, I think that's all I want to say. I don't want to, it's not about me, you know what I'm saying? I appreciate you creating the platform for us to just have the dope conversation.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. Listen, there'll definitely, if you're up for it, there'll definitely be a part two, man. Cause I really,
absolutely,
really, and everybody who listens to this, there is I don't know how to explain it, but there's another layer that comes with dancing past your physical and mental execution of it. And there's something inside us that's begging to come out. And Jesse, I love that. That's the way, kind of the way that I hear you interpret dancing and your dancing. It kind of helps me understand that that's probably why it resonates with me so, because I am truly, truly a fan, bro. So I do want to say thank you again, man.
Man, I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
All right, brother. Hey, I'll send you a message right now. All right.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. Have a good night.
You too, brother.
All right. Peace, bro.
Everybody, that was Jesse motherfucking Sykes. Dude, follow him. Follow him. Check out his artwork. He's amazing. Yeah, I'm going to try to do these sign-offs with the smoking section a little bit more. Yeah, I enjoy this. This was a great talk. Yeah, he's very spiritual with what he does. The Milkman signing out. Thank you, my guy. I appreciate you. I seen that you texted me. I'm going to text you back right now, but you got to wait. Yeah, usual Tuesday podcast is being moved to Monday for next week. I am going to try to come back with two more guests either by next week or the following. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about recording on Thanksgiving, so I'll let you guys know. Just turn on the subscriptions, turn on the bells and shit for notifications for when I go live or when I make posts that I'm going to go live. I'm trying to make sure that I plan them out. The fuck up usual Mondays, but I'm trying to plan them out enough to where I can kind of like promote them a little easier now. Yeah, I'm using more resources that are available to me. But until next time, yeah, have an amazing day, week, month, year in life. I'll see you on the flip side.